We fight a lot about the best way to educate children in our country. Today's guest could start a fight over science education all by herself if anybody accidentally took her book seriously. The book is called Science for Her. And a first glance at the pink and red cover reminds you of the women's magazines like Cosmopolitan that riveted our attention at the supermarket checkout stands. The little headlines trumpet sections like sexiest molecules and carbon dating. Science for her indeed. Megan Amram is the author. She's a writer for the popular sitcom Parks and Recreation, and it's been a pretty quick trip since her graduation from Harvard several years back. Megan Amram gained fame through tweets and videos online. Jezebel called her a national treasure for her viral video, Birth Control on the Bottom. Megan Amram, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So right out of the chute, let's address the needs of the baby boomers. Who called you a national treasure?
Jezebel, a women's magazine online, but I'm sure a lot of people have called me National Treasure. It just hasn't been in print.
Ah, they might have said some other words,
but too. Just assume like dozens of people have.
All right. Does it ever boggle your mind how different showbiz and the pathway to a career can be in comedy now from what it was just a few years ago?
I constantly wake up in the morning thinking, how weird is it that this is how I got here? Because my career really did start on the internet, a thing that I was pretty sure everyone was going to get sick of pretty soon. Isn't the internet done? We have so many good print magazines and books, but apparently it's here to stay. And there are a lot of comedy writers now who are being found through Twitter or YouTube. So I think that's just how it's going to be.
You might be talking, I understand, to old friends and family. I understand that you grew up in Portland.
I did, yes, which I still am so proud of, and I go back as much as I can. And I love telling people in L.A. how much Portland really beats them at everything.
Do you watch Portlandia, that TV show?
I do, and I know a lot of people who work on it, and I think it's pretty incredible. And my friends who haven't been to Portland but who watch the show, I assure them that Portland is just as weird, if not weirder.
Than was portrayed in the show, you mean?
Yeah. My mom, who lives in Portland, told me recently she was at a Target and saw a beautiful, topless, hippie woman breastfeeding two babies in her shopping cart as she was walking them down the aisles. And I was like, yeah, that's Portland. That sounds pretty Portland.
We hear you have a twin brother. Is he funny, too?
He is way funnier than me. I've said this a lot publicly, so he better get me a good birthday present. But I was always the very studious, serious, nerdy one growing up, and he was the old class clown, always getting in trouble for it. And then at some point a few years ago, I thought, I'm going to be a comedy writer, and he decided to be a doctor. So we did a little flip-flop, and if you knew us as children, it's very strange.
It sounds like flipping a switch. Was there some defining incident that made you say, with God as my witness, I will never be unfunny again or something?
The defining incident was a Freaky Friday-style body swap. I'm now my brother's soul trapped inside my body. I think truly your brain just does change a lot, especially as you're a college-age student. And I'm still inherently the same nerdy, serious person, but I figured out that writing something that elicits a response as wonderful as laughter is very satisfying. And I just at some point realized that I could sort of analytic my way into figuring out how to write a joke. And my brother, I think, just wanted a stable job with a lot of money so he could buy cool watches. So that's why he's a doctor.
Well, there's a difference, though, between doing stand-up and doing the kind of stuff that you do, for example. Because
when
you send out funny tweets, you make funny videos. I mean, I assume for a lot of these, like the Glee audition video where you put lipstick all over your face. was anybody in the room with you at the time?
No, nobody was in the room at the time, which maybe makes it weirder. It was a very rainy day in Los Angeles, and I was very bored, reminding me a little of Portland there, and decided just to do something I always wanted to do, unrelated to comedy, which was put lipstick all over my face. And, you know, the great thing about the internet is you do that and then people just have to watch it. Because there are enough people obsessed with the internet who will watch almost anything. that you can trick them into watching a 5-minute video of you putting lipstick all over your face.
But you know, then for the folks who haven't seen it, you say, I'm going to do my audition song will be We Built the City.
Oh, yes. So I say, it's called Help Me, Megan Amram, Get on Glee. And it is posed as a audition for the TV show Glee. And I say, my audition song is going to be We Built the City on Rock and Roll, and then start playing the song. And silently for the next 5 minutes, just slowly put lipstick all over my face. So, spoiler alerts, that's what happened.
You know, and you really can't stop watching it. But I guess the question comes back to, how did you know it would be funny?
That is an interesting question. It's really my style of humor that I like to watch as well, is things that border on not funny, but sort of performance art-y. That's what I always find the funniest, is things where you don't really know if they're real or not, which sort of plays into the book that I wrote, which looks like a Cosmo pretty impeccably, I think. And I wanted people to not know if I was doing this as a joke or it was sincere. And it makes it very uncomfortable. So whether or not people thought my lipstick video was funny or they thought it was a woman on the verge of a breakdown, I was into it.
So the nervous laughter. So yes, we've talked about Science for Her as the love child of Cosmopolitan and a science textbook. And we'll come back and talk more about that and about the rest of her career with Megan Amram, the author of Science for Her. Tips for hosting your own Big Bang are among the things included in here. Back with Megan Amram and you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is Megan Amram, comedy writer, well known for tweets and videos, and also now working on the TV show Parks and Recreation. She's the author of a book, what looks like a science textbook that got mixed up at the printers with Cosmopolitan magazine and came out as Science for Her, a pink and red book that looks like it's hard to describe. You'll have to listen to us as we talk about it. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 with your questions and comments, or go online and make an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Make an email. I sound older every day as I do this.
I'm gonna make so many emails to this show just making fun of you for saying that.
Sounds fair enough. When you are a funny person, you often get introduced as like, hey, this is Megan. She's really funny. And so do people at parties say stuff like, really? Like what? Like, be funny.
Yes, it is something that I think all comedy writers or comedians have to deal with a lot at weddings, especially with people who don't quite understand our jobs. And the response is always, oh yeah, tell me a joke, which is a worst nightmare for most comedians. I think it's the equivalent of if someone went up to my doctor brother and said, oh, do me a surgery. Just... oh, you're a doctor? Oh, cut off my finger and put it back on. It's like, I need a lot of preparation. Yeah, there's so many things to explain.
Well, do you end up getting into situations where somebody says, well, Kayla, I watch Parks and Rec all the time. Which joke was yours?
Yes, that also all the time. And that, I think, is a little harder to understand that in a writer's room setting, truly it's so collaborative that every single part of a show could be traced back to like multiple people or a discussion in a writer's room. So even though you do have individual jokes, it's very hard to parse apart things that stand alone. That being said, every single joke on that show is mine.
The collaborative aspect of things, though, I mean, I imagine there's an interesting mix of stresses there because you guys are in fairly tight deadlines from what everybody understands.
Yeah.
You probably crack each other up a lot, too.
Yes. It's such an interesting type of job, just if you're into human group psychology. You're spending all day, every day with about 10 other people. And luckily for me, Parks and Recreation is full of very nice people. But it becomes this weird hive mind where sometimes you make the same exact joke as someone at the same time. But it really forces you to think outside of what you'd normally do just by yourself. So it feels really good. It also is a lot of work. You have to really stay on your toes.
And so who's the person in the room who says, no, no, that character wouldn't do that, or at least didn't until now?
We do that all the time, and I think that's what makes a good show, is policing what a character would and wouldn't do and trying to really get in their head. Because it can be easy sometimes to write a joke that's pretty crazy and say, oh, that's funny, we should put it in the show. But if a character wouldn't do or say that, it's not worth it. And you just have to go back and force yourself to think of something new.
Given the fact that you are a little better known now, perhaps, than you were when you first did your Glee audition video, rubbing lipstick all over your face.
Well, I still haven't gotten on Glee, so...
Okay, that was the question, whether Ryan Murphy has called you.
The audition still stands Ryan Murphy, head of Glee. So... You know, please get in touch with my people. They're all waiting by their phones.
And how long did it take to get the taste of lipstick off your teeth and out of your mouth?
It wasn't as bad as it seems, partially because I buy very cheap lipstick from Target. So it really just washed right off. Maybe I still have some in my teeth 3 years later.
Megan Amram's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Science for Her, but she's also a writer for Parks and Recreation and puts out lots of tweets, including one I saw the other day on Halloween. Watch out for razor blades and candy. They're just empty calories.
Yes.
And what was the other one? Let's see. There was one about another fall-themed one. At the intermission of musicals, there should be a very short football game.
Oh, yeah. That was a very... I also now am embarrassed that I just laughed at my own tweet. I was laughing at your reading of it. But I'm obsessed with musicals. I went with my friend to see Pippin, one of the silliest musicals. And it was, we went on the same night as Game 7 of the World Series. I just had to make sure that World Series is actually what it's called. I'm not a sports fan.
World Series is correct, yes.
Yes, ding. And the sports event, the big sports event. And we were talking at intermission, and I was thinking how funny it would be if there was a reverse Super Bowl halftime show. So I'm going to work on that.
I like the idea. It is a fun one. I did notice, let's see, what else is online right now? Your video invitation to Ann Coulter to buy
yes.
your book.
I mean, if you read the book, you'll realize that Ann Coulter and I really do have a ton in common. It also appears we shop at the same places. We have a lot of the same conservative beliefs. And I really just thought we would be besties. And I sent a video. I tweeted it to her many times, just explaining how close we would be and how I wanted her to read my book. And she has not responded. So I'm feeling pretty rejected. But the offer still stands. I hear Ann Coulter is a big fan of yours, Jeff. So if she's listening to the show, just get in touch with me.
Yeah. She streams us every day at this time to get ready for her own work. Yeah. I had to appreciate, though, from the Oregon sensibilities you bring to this, though, like when you said trees are bullies.
Yeah. I mean, imagine what it's like being a woman growing up in Oregon, seeing all of these trees with their beautiful thin bodies and knowing you're never going to be as tall and thin and brittle as they are. It's pretty much, it turned me into who I am, just all these trees making fun of me for being fat.
It's one thing to make funny tweets and one-liners and dialogue for a show that ultimately ends up 22 minutes, I guess, of actual content. Mm-hmm. A book is a bigger thing. So tell us about the genesis of Science for Her.
Well, the book is mostly pictures, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get it, and it's going to have about the same amount of words as a tweet. But it really was the biggest project I've done so far. I've been writing short comedy prose on my blog for a few years now, and I just did it for fun because it's a nice way to take a little break from writing scripts for TV, but it still is comedy writing. And I liked it so much I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know what I wanted to write it about. But I knew I wanted it to be sort of high concept and to look very interesting. And the women's magazine appearance occurred to me, since I'm so obsessed with them, not in a I'm a fan of them. I just can't believe they really exist. And the satire just sort of followed after choosing to do that aesthetic. So a lot of the book was thinking of the sidebars and quizzes and the little bits and pieces that are in women's magazines like Cosmo. So those are very fun to write in little chunks. But there is a slight narrative and a story that the fake Megan Amram, who wrote it, is telling the whole time, and she's much crazier than me.
You're selling yourself a little short here. There's actually a lot of words in here. This actually could pass for a textbook if you're like.
That's what you're supposed to do on radio shows, is just totally make fun of yourself and tell people your book is bad.
Yeah. Although, you know, why some of these things are science subjects, like My First Christmas. Because I was raised a Jew, a woman, and a Democrat, I was denied the luxury of celebrating Christmas.
So that's all a true story. I grew up in the godless country of Oregon, so of course, but I also did grow up a quote-unquote Jew. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I am living with one of my best friends from college, and he's super into Christmas, and I similarly became obsessed with it. I wanted to put up our Christmas tree yesterday, and my roommate said that we weren't allowed to.
We're talking to Megan Amram. She's the author of Science for Her. She's a writer for the sitcom Parks and Recreation, with tweets and videos and all kinds of things going on all the time. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have questions or comments about Megan and her work. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Or send us an email. Send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. So was the starting point for the book, I mean, you mentioned some of it already, but I mean, was there a certain level of anger here too at the way women are portrayed or portray themselves in the magazines like Cosmo?
Definitely. And this is where I transition from joke responses into real response. I really did want to write about feminism and sexism because I consider myself a very strong feminist, and I think it's the older you get, the more you realize that there are so many ways that women could be portrayed in a healthier way in all types of media. And so I thought this was a great opportunity to, first and foremost, try to make people laugh. But the second goal is to make people think a little about insidious sexism that might be occurring in magazines or in politics or any number of things. So the book appears to be the most sexist thing ever. And it is, of course, my liberal satire, but hopefully some people will think it's real and get really mad at me.
Well, it does seem, I mean, it's so easy to make fun of stuff like the cover of Cosmo, which you do really well on the cover of the book. Because the cover of Cosmo sometimes seems like it's full of Mad Libs. They just change the number of ways to rock his world in the bedroom, you know, stuff like that.
It's so crazy how little content there is that becomes recycled every single issue and in all of those magazines. To do research for this book, I went to Barnes & Noble and bought like 20 women's magazines and a big stack of high school science textbooks, which was, I took a picture of my purchase because I thought it sort of summed up everything in my life. But I read all these magazines all at once to try to get myself into a trance to see how they write and editorialize and what they write about. And it blew my mind, like a 1984 doublethink kind of way, that every article was sort of the same, except for they changed the number of sex tips or the season of clothing. And the voice was always the same, which was a woman speaking to her girlfriends very casually, but also making fun of them every other sentence. So it seems like a very passive-aggressive editorial voice to me, and that's what I wrote my book in, was the crazy heightened version where the Megan who's narrating calls everyone her best friend, but then tells them they're fat and their hands are too fat to turn the pages.
I know the dedication, which goes on for six, eight pages, ten pages.
It's longer. Yeah, maybe eight, maybe like 12.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
The dedication page at the very beginning of my book is dedicated to all my best friends, and then it's just hundreds of girl names and descriptions of why they're my best friends. Because that is something that I gently like to tease about is girls, especially these editorial voices that call everyone their best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that too. I genuinely feel it when I'm talking about girlfriends that I love. I get very excited. I'm like, oh, she's one of my best friends. So my real life best friend army is probably hundreds of people long. You're my best friend, Jeff.
Oh, good. It's good to know. So I could be in the dedication of the next book, maybe.
Yeah, I'll just scribble it in on every book before people buy them.
Well, I'll have to come up and see you when you're at Powell's in Portland on Friday, November 14th, and you can scribble it in there.
Yes, and I'm in conversation at Powell's with my mom, which I'm very excited about.
So it actually is an appearance with her. It's not that she's sitting at your elbow then.
Oh, no. When we were planning my little book tour, and of course Powell's is the one I'm most excited about. It's like, really feels like coming to my hometown. We were talking, me and my publishing company, about, are there any celebrities you know in Portland who would be fun to chat with on stage? And I immediately thought, oh, my kooky little mom would be pretty fun to put in a public setting. She's pretty nervous, so, which I'm all for, because I just think the more nervous my mom is, the funnier it will be.
Oh, that's a good. I didn't even notice the rest of the list until just now because I zeroed in on the one in Portland. But in New York on Sunday with Megan Mullally, in Brooklyn on Saturday with John Hodgman.
Yeah, those will be super fun. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah.
At the Strand on Sunday, it's going to be Megan on Megan, and I think that will be very silly. And then with John Hodgman, I asked him to read his book at the same exact time that I read mine. So it might just be cacophony for like 20 minutes.
It does sound fun. We have a call for you. Here is Anne and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Megan Amram, the author of Science for Her. No, it's not a real textbook.
Thank you. One of the things that I get a big laugh out of, and you may have noticed it too, in these so-called women's magazine, I'll have to let you know that I've never in my life bought a women's magazine.
Yes.
Anyway, on one hand, they'll have this big headline of, you know, lose 80 pounds. And then the other is this great big picture of this dessert that must be at least 2,000 calories per portion.
Yes.
And it just, to me, represents the schizophrenia that women are encouraged to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. You feel totally pushed and pulled in all directions if you're listening to what the media is telling women to be. So it's always weigh as close to your birth weight as possible, be as thin as you possibly can be, but also be like a cool girl who can, you know, drink beer and eat a burger and just don't be so uptight and relax and have fun. And you can't really do both of those things at once. So it is very, if you're really listening to their advice, it might drive you insane.
Yeah. I read in another interview, you talked about liking comedians who might be crazy. And yet we hear you were a nanny. Would you say that your light and dark parts are pretty evenly balanced?
Aren't you so glad that I was in charge of children?
Depends on whose, I guess.
Yeah, no, that was a fun little part of my life when I first moved to Los Angeles, where I was a nanny and a tutor and was an extra in some television shows to make a little money. You can see me in an episode of Victorious on Nickelodeon wearing a babushka, looking like an Eastern European immigrant. It's very exciting. I definitely think the light and dark part of my personality are balanced and are both like very extreme. So part of me is the most bubbly person I think I know. And I love glitter and nail polish and Hello Kitty. I just went to a Hello Kitty convention on Saturday for like 5 hours in Los Angeles. But then the other part of me is obsessed with the darkest parts of the human condition, and my favorite movie is A Clockwork Orange, and I love people who seem to be teetering on the verge of insanity. But that's what's fun about being a person right now, and especially being a woman right now, is you can combine all those things, and it makes you an individual, and that's really exciting.
We will talk much more about the excitement of being Megan Amram when we return to the Jefferson Exchange. The book is called Science for Her. Wow. Bachelors of Science is one of the great little topics on the front page. I mean, it looks like a Cosmopolitan cover. We'll talk more with Megan Amram about Science for Her and her other comedy pursuits when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest is Megan Amram, comedy writer on the popular sitcom Parks and Recreation. She's also got lots of videos out there and tweets and all sorts of presence on the internet. And this book that looks like the love child between a science textbook and Cosmopolitan magazine. It's called Science for Her, a real tongue-in-cheek look at science, and it's a really lot of fun to read. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. The bio in the book calls you fun and flirty, and I understand you have a very short history with that phrase, Megan.
I really latched onto that phrase because it's something I've never said in day-to-day life, but it appears in various forms all the time in these magazines like Cosmo and Glamour. And I used it, I need to go through my book and count how many times I used it, but I think I probably used it 60 times. Every single quiz or list or piece starts with, here's a fun and flirty quiz for you to find out if you have cancer or whatever it is.
When you talked about the trance you went into after reading, you know, like 24 women's magazines, and then you had the science textbooks on the other side, I mean, so was it like absorbing all this stuff and then barfing it, for lack of a better term, onto the page to come up with the book?
That's literally what I did. The book is covered in barf. Yeah. Each copy I painstakingly threw up on. It was a really great way to jump into it, as I read all these magazines and then quickly tried to figure out the patterns of how they wrote them, and then wrote the book very much from that place of just like, keep it in the world of very excited, very passive aggressive female speaker.
Is it hard to keep up that guise, in a sense, to keep that voice on for as long as you did? Because it's, you know, you can get, like, only so long I can go fun and flirty, right?
Yeah, it was very fun. I will say that it was very easy. It was easier than maybe it should have been to slip into that character. So maybe that's my true self, is an insane woman who's obsessed with her ex-boyfriend and can't drive and has ostensibly killed people. So, yeah, that might just be what I'm moving towards now that I've discovered it. But it's very fun to write as someone that you are not. And I think that's what kept it interesting for me, is that I wasn't just writing as myself about my life. I was allowing myself to make up the craziest situations for this awful woman to be in.
And the crazier, the better, it seems. I mean, you've managed to include a swastika in the first few pages of the book.
When you say it like that, it sounds very poetic. I promise, it's so weird. No, it's the person who designed the book, who really did, I think, an incredible job of making it look both like a Cosmo and like a textbook. He had a really great sense of humor, and told me that he was able to get a swastika and an American flag on the same spread in the dedication page. I was like, yep, This is exactly why you write a book. This is why Shakespeare wrote books, to get swastikas and American flags on the same page.
It was an obscure book many years ago, but it was a book of short comedy bits as well, called Golfing for Cats. They had a picture of a swastika on the cover as well. And as the author explained in that one, too, it's simply because people love books about golfing and about cats and about the Third Reich. So what the heck?
That's implicit in every book about golfing, is something about the Third Reich. I feel like I'm reclaiming the swastika for my people. This is just one step towards that.
It's a very important step, and I'm glad it's happening
here in the
Jefferson Exchange. Let's take a call. We have Melinda and Ashlyn on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Megan Amram, the comedy writer, author of Science for Her. Melinda, there?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Thanks. Hi, Megan. Thank you so much for being so funny and flirty.
Hi, thank you. Oh, you use that so well.
I just became aware of this visual artist named Sophia Wallace and her project on cliteracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious to know if you're familiar with her work.
I'm not, but that sounds amazing.
Okay, well, sister, you need to check her stuff out because it's super awesome. And I see a huge merge of hilarity and informative information on the science of women's clitoris.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to go eat this up. Pun intended.
All right. Thanks for that. Melinda, appreciate the call. Cliteracy, and we'll have to do some research on that and see if that's like a second edition of Science for Her.
Yeah.
Did you write the book in little pieces and assemble it later, or was this done from beginning to end, basically?
I did I was writing it while I was at work, so I'd write it in chunks the mornings before I'd go to Parks and Rec. But I did write the narrative pretty chronologically and without too much of an outline, knowing where the story of this woman was going to go. And I did that on purpose because I just wanted to sort of inhabit this crazy woman's brain. I use the word crazy a lot. It is very crazy. And just logically follow what her life story, as she teaches you about science, would be. And it worked out pretty well. She has big life milestones in every chapter, and I think the ending is exactly where she wants to be. I don't want to give away anything, but it became stream of consciousness a little at certain parts.
Well, you mentioned already the obsession with the ex-boyfriend, Xander. I mean, is he based on a real relationship?
He is not, but he's based on the composite relationships of every woman who has been obsessed with an ex but doesn't want people to know. So the Megan in the book really talks about Xander so much but constantly asserts that she's over him, even though she just left with his entire middle school hockey team. But that doesn't mean anything. She's definitely over Xander.
Where to go, you know, to talk about the stuff in the book? I mean, because you actually have real science in here. There's a whole section on air pollution. Smog is created through the chemical reaction of sunlight, nitrogen oxides, ground-level ozone, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide. But then right under that is most romantic places to see smog, with a collection of women wearing masks.
Well, that was what was so fun about writing it, is I really am a science nerd, and found myself when I was reading these high school textbooks to figure out what sort of science I wanted to put in the book. I would just start reading it, and then I would realize that I'd been reading it for fun for the past 5 minutes, and had to bully myself, call myself a nerd, and get back to writing my comedy book. But I think that's what I was really going for, is there'd be these moments of true, sincere science teaching that would immediately revert into glamour style lists of where's the cutest place to see smog, or what's the best way to dress for each stage of climate change.
So you have to slap down the nerdy you instantly with the fun and flirty you.
Yes. So it's really just very bipolar the whole time.
Well, sure, because smog can cause emphysema, bronchitis, and asthma, but a really beautiful romantic backdrop to a makeout sesh.
Yes. I again, laughing at my own joke. It's just because you read it so well.
Well, thank you. Well, which raises the question, though, and I've often wondered about this for anybody who writes comedy. I mean, you have to find it funny on some level, or know that somebody else will, or hope that somebody else will. So it's okay. I mean, you do laugh out loud occasionally upon the writing, don't you?
It is very interesting. Yes, and I think that is a very exciting thing when you write something that surprises yourself. And when you read it months later, you think, oh, yeah, that's funny. I'm still laughing at that. But most of the time, I think it's true for myself and for a lot of people, there's a very fine line between funny and not funny. And it really, you sometimes have no idea. I personally think I have a pretty strong internal compass of what I like and what I find funny. But I also love having my friends read my stuff. And I'm really open to criticism and collaboration just because comedy is such a subjective thing that hits everyone in a different way. So I think you want as many eyes on it as possible.
I got that. And as many options as possible, too, in some cases. I noticed there's a whole list of sex phrases here, you know, things that people are familiar with, like the train and the tunnel. But but some of these clearly came from your mind, battering the parsnip at the state fair.
Oh, I mean, yes, that was one of the more fun things to write. I barely could stop myself from writing these euphemisms. And as you can see, they come back constantly throughout the book. I call my lady parts the Hurt Locker at one point, which is I'm pretty proud of. But it's so fun to get into these zones of just writing way too many jokes on one subject. And I guess that's what an editor is for. Like, I have a chapter called Kale with 4 exclamation marks, which, apropos of nothing, it just comes out of nowhere, is a chapter of just 300 recipes that include kale with exclamation marks after the names. So I read that for my audiobook, and it took 20 minutes. So it's 20 minutes of me just screaming the names of kale recipes.
Well, and there's also Paula Deen's health food cookbook right smack
yes.
in the middle of everything.
Food jokes are always my favorite. Any joke about food I will probably love, but yes, I wrote Paula Deen's health food cookbook, which is her idea of what healthy cooking might be, which includes just a glazed ham and a glass of water. So I think that pretty much sums up what I think about her ethos.
There are other names of famous people that come into science for her, and Todd Akin is one of them. And as much as
yes.
we joke about the focus in women's magazines on things you can do in the bedroom to turn him on, and you know, obviously stuff about reproduction, all that jazz. But then you really rip up the concept of legitimate rape, and I have
yes.
to ask if Todd Akin is a gift that just keeps on giving.
He did basically a few months ago. Sort of in a backhanded way say that he still believed that, which I was overjoyed about, because that just means his comments about the fact that if a legitimate rape occurs, the female body has a way to shut that whole thing down, meaning reproduction, and that there's no way a baby can come out of it, and therefore you don't need a baby aborted in cases of rape, which, you know, based on my layman's understanding of science, is incorrect. And
to put it mildly.
Yeah. So I really, that represented to me just how annoying it is. Annoying is also the mild word to use.
Right.
That,
the radio-friendly version.
Right. That these, some men like Todd Akin think that they can just casually speak about women's bodies with no scientific background. But in my book, I, of course, scientifically prove that he was correct, that in legitimate rape, there are all these ways that the female biology cannot get pregnant. And I have a diagram and everything. So hopefully he'll accidentally use my book in some sort of public speech as backup for his theories.
And it is really, really funny. But I'll tell you something, it's certainly tempered with the knowledge that these things got said and certainly get believed by some people on the way as well.
Yeah.
So did you train as a comedy writer? Is it possible to train as a comedy writer?
I think that I did not train formally. That would be cool if you could get like a grad degree in comedy.
Famous comedy writer school, yeah.
Yeah, at Juilliard. but I did write once I realized in college that I loved this pursuit. I actually wrote a bunch of musicals with one of my friends. I wrote the book and lyrics to three musicals, and that was sort of the type of writing I thought I was going to pursue. I still really love that. But I also have always been a huge fan of television. I was obsessed with The Simpsons as a kid, and that was also a world I really wanted to jump into. So I think the way you train to be a comedy writer is you write all the time and you get feedback from your friends and people who maybe can do it as a job if you have access to them. And it's really just all about finding what you want to write about and your comedic voice.
Were there any particular people you watched growing up who you thought, God, I want to do that?
The two comedy movies I think I've seen the most are Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is still, I think, my favorite comedy, and Airplane, which are both classics. And I remember, even as a kid, recognizing when the jokes were amazing.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Thank you.
Megan, very good to have you today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's been great. Thank you.
Megan Amram is the author of Science for Her on the bookstands now.